Thank you, microdose.com. That's all I have to say right now. I have been traveling so much, planes, cars, like long, long drives. My body hurts, you know, sleeping in different beds, in different hotels, you know, everything's kind of screwy. And thank you, microdose.com. I know you've heard the word microdose before, but this is microdosing THC. And microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And you deserve to feel good. You can go to their website, microdose.com, and learn all about microdosing THC. But I'm telling you, it is amazing. They have all different strains that help with all different issues. A friend of mine just sent me a photo of her with her order from microdose.com saying thank you. I'm telling you, a lot of people do this, all sorts of people. And they do it to feel healthier. They do it to perform better. They do it to focus. They do it to sleep. They do it for pain. They do it for relaxation. It really helps your mind and body be at peace. So really check it out. Microdose.com is amazing. And the product, they taste delicious, number one. But the product is so damn good. And you deserve to feel better. So what are you going to do? You're going to go to microdose.com. If you don't already know, you're going to learn about microdosing THC. And when you get there, you're going to get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code Judy Gold. It is available nationwide. That is microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, for 30% off and free shipping. That is a lot, 30% off. And the stuff is amazing. I'm telling you, microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold. You're welcome.
Regen auf mein Kopf. Hink wie ein Deckel, muss es die kleine Farbe im Top. Geht mir kein Sach mit, die Drop.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I am your host, Judy Gold, and this week, very excited, we have Mayan Lopez, who is on this great series called Lopez versus Lopez with her father, George Lopez, who I actually interviewed at the 92nd Street Y years ago when his, not that long ago, I sound like, you know, years ago, when his book came out. I know him. I know Mayan's mother, who's a doll. And it's a really great, interesting interview. You know, the only child of this huge star, and her mother's pretty awesome too. So I think you'll find it very enjoyable and interesting, because God only knows, you know, you think people who grow up in Hollywood or, you know, with these successful parents are spoiled brats, and not all of them are. Anyway, what a week it's been. What a week. I did a reading of my new show based on my book, which is coming out in March. I'll give you more info on that when I'm allowed to. It went really well, and I'm excited about it. So that's that. I have gigs. Oh my God, this week. Let me just tell you about my gigs this week. So tomorrow night, which is the 14th of December, I'll be at the Chosen Comedy Festival in Miami, Florida. But I'm doing the Boca Black Box in Boca Raton, Florida on Thursday, the 15th of December. The 25th of December, which, as you know, is Christmas. I'm doing a very Judy Christmas. It's Christmas at Stand Up New York. And then in January, the 21st, I'm at the Sellersville Theater in Sellersville, Pennsylvania. And the 26th through the 8th of January, I'm at the Comedy Loft in Washington, D.C. Okay? And then we go into February. Do you really want to hear about my February? No. But February 4th, I will be at the Avenel Performing Arts Center in Avenel, New Jersey, which is right by where I grew up. Not happily. Anyway, so those are my upcoming dates. I just wanted to put them out there. Yeah, it's been some week. I've been writing a lot, and I have been getting really angry about the anti-Semitism and the racism and the people's will to the people's, the white supremacists who love when Jews and blacks fight, and we need to not fight. We are together. We're better together, and we support each other, and we love each other. And the world would be so boring without the Jews and the blacks. I hate to tell you. Okay. Also, I wanted to tell you something else. And of course, I can't fucking remember it because I can't remember anything anymore. Like the words come in my head and I'm like, oh, I'm going to tell everyone blank. And then it just disappears. And I'm really, really, really getting sick of it. Like really, really getting sick of it. Anyway, today I am going to Washington, D.C. today, the day that my podcast comes out. And I was, this is such a nice story. I was invited to the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act because my nephew works in the Department of the Interior. And he was invited to the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act bill. And instead of going with his wife, he said, I think it would be more meaningful for you to go. How nice is my nephew? Okay, so today, as you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on Tuesday when it comes out, I am at the White House. Okay? I'm very excited about that. Yeah, I don't know what else to tell you. Gearing up for the holidays and, you know, getting depressed in January. So that should be a lot of fun. But anyway, this week is part one of my interview with Mayan Lopez. And I don't usually interview really young people because I feel like, you know, the life experience isn't there, but what a life she's had already. She is such an old soul. So I hope you enjoy. I hope you sit back. I hope you relax. And whatever you're doing, if you're on the treadmill, if you're on the elliptical, if you're on the stair climber, if you're doing weights, if you're just laying around, I hope you enjoy part one of my interview with Mayan Lopez. First of all, I want to begin this part one. I haven't done this in a while, but I have a kill me now moment. At the end of the podcast, I'm going to ask you what pisses you off more than anything in the entire world, because the name of the podcast is Kill Me Now, because I get so fucking aggravated about every little thing. We're recording this at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. At 12, I don't know, like 20, I'm on the Peloton, okay? I'm in the middle of a Broadway ride, okay?
Okay.
Which I'm so, you know, you know those musicals and how they...
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm like, oh my God, yes, this is what I needed to hear. Dear Evan Hansen, and I needed to hear Rent. And I, you know, like, yes, this is how I'm going to start my day. Like
sometimes the only way to perform is through song, and they get it. They get right. It. They understand.
Right. And I'm like, yeah. And the fucking internet goes out.
No.
Right, like, in the middle where the music was getting really good and I was going at a... Yeah, and the fucking internet goes out. And I walk in the bedroom where the thing is, and there's no lights on. And I'm like, I can't... I honestly... And, of course, I blame God. Like, I think there's this other thing going on that's a black cloud against me. Like, you know what? I'm bored. Let's get Judy today, you know? So that's what happened. And today we have... I'm so excited. I don't usually interview young people because they have no life yet. But you have a very full life. And I know both of your parents. Mm-hmm. Your mother is like a bottle of joy. Isn't she?
Oh, she is. It's now every time she walks into a room, she'll just go, honey.
She loves to sing. You. And it's supposed to be Bundle of Joy, but she's like a bottle. But you have such an... I mean, you're 26. You're the same age as my son, my older son. And your life, really fascinating. You know, it's funny. I was going back. I do a lot of research. And, you know, I know your father. I interviewed him at the 92nd Street Y when his book came out. We had a really great time. And it was right... when the bad shit was happening. And, you know, we were all really mad at him. And we're going to get to that later. Mm-hmm. But let's just preface that there's a really incredible story that happens. Wait, how old were you? Let me look. I have it all down. When in 2005, in 2005, a really incredible. And then in 2010. So I was I was doing research, and your parents. So your father's George Lopez, your mom's Ann Serrano, who actor, singer, producer, just all around bundle of joy, as I said, but I said bottle of joy.
Bottle of joy. Let's get on the record.
Yeah, because of my fucking internet. And your mother's parents were both doctors.
Yes.
Mom was an anesthesiologist, and the father was they're from Hartford. Well, she was born in Hartford, right?
Yeah. So they were born in Hartford. They're both from Havana, Cuba. They've known each other since they were 8 years old. And then my grandmother went into medical school. This is how smart my grandfather was. My grandfather wanted to be an engineer, but then she was one of the only two people in medical school, only two women, and he got jealous. And so he went to be a doctor.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll just become a doctor.
See, the misogyny doesn't end. It doesn't end, you know, yeah.
And so they were medical students. And then in 1959, that's when Castro came over Cuba. And my aunt was about 3 years old at the time. And she started singing communist songs, coming home and singing communist songs. And my grandparents looked at each other and were like, we have to get out of here. Right. They didn't know Castro was a communist, but they kind of caught on early. And so they wrote 300 handwritten letters to any hospital in the United States that would accept both of them. And the first one was a little Cook County hospital in Cook County, Connecticut, in Hartford. And so my grandparents got my aunt, her mother, like two suitcases with $200. They went to the Swiss embassy, and then they got their green card and were able to fly out. And my grandmother was an anesthesiologist, and my grandfather was an obstetrician, gynecologist, but then he went into aviational medicine and was the doctor for the astronauts during the Apollo missions.
No way. Yes.
So he was Neil Armstrong's doctor.
And no fucking way.
Yeah. My mom went to Freedom Point Elementary and saw the rockets. And then he became the medical director of Eastern Airlines. That is an airline that doesn't exist anymore. So it's a pretty.
I know. I remember story. Eastern Airlines. Mm-hmm. Wait. So do you have pictures of your grandfather with Neil and all these astronauts?
I have a picture of them on. They were on a dude ranch in Montana, and
no way.
And there's a picture, and then we have a picture of we have an Apollo patch that they gave everyone at NASA. So I think it was like Apollo 11, and they have a picture of the moon, one of the pictures from the moon from the 60s, and they have it signed to him. Yeah, it's really really incredible.
That's so fucking cool. And then they moved to Ohio, and then Florida,
and then Florida.
And then your grandfather died in a car accident in 87, 53. Right?
53.
Just fucking awful. Just so awful. And then it's interesting because then on your father's side, he's the son of a migrant worker who abandoned him, basically.
Yeah, when he was 2 months old.
Is he related to Fidel Castro?
I was like, I wish, it's so funny with celebrities. Like, I've always wanted to do a 23andMe test.
Yeah.
But I think that with my dad's crazy side of the family, I think he'd have to go under a different name because he wouldn't want people
I was doing research. Who was it that I read that was, because I was going in this deep hole of your family, and I was like, and I read someone was like, relate via marriage to Fidel Castro. It's so, you know, just that story of the, you know, migrant worker, educated, you know, having to leave this horrible place and come to America. And, you know, you just look, you can look at your grandparents, you can look at your parents and what they have given to society as a whole and how much we love them. They're beloved. They've, you know, and these motherfuckers, like, it must make you so angry.
It really does. Because also my grandfather on my mother's side, he actually cheated on my grandmother as well. And so there's kind of a generational.
Oh, it's so, I know.
And, you know, he was in the car with his girlfriend at the time, my grandfather, when he passed away, and he didn't take his heart medication. He was supposed to have a heart surgery, but he didn't want to be away from his patients. And so he fell asleep at the wheel, and she was there, and my grandmother and him were talking about getting back back together because, you know, they left the country together. They've known each other since they were children. And then, you know, she gets a knock on the door that he's gone. And so it's...
Did the girlfriend survive?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
And then she worked in the office. And, you know, that's another thing with my mother, like how much sacrifice and, you know, hard work.
It's like a mirror.
They're both of my parents. I've really, truly seen the value of hard work from behind the scenes. Because, you know, my mom always says it's show business. And not a lot of people understand the business side. And I've got the unique opportunity to see the business side of, you know, my mom always tells me stories of when my dad was coming up and stand up. She was like, you are always going to wear a suit. Every day when you go up, you're going to wear a suit. And then when the second you're done with your set, even if we just go home, order pizza, we're going to leave because we want people to see that you are going to go do something else. It was all about appearance.
She's so right. Perception.
And even there was a, I love this story. So my mom, my dad had, but when I, people always think that I came home with a silver spoon in my mouth.
Oh, I know.
And you know, it's with the hard work. It's, I've always had to work hard to, you know, always wanting to be the best comedian that I could be, but also to not turn out like everyone expects me to.
Right.
There's, and so, you know, my parents brought me home from to a condo on Barham. And that's so wild that with the show Lopez versus Lopez, we had a billboard on Barham, and that's where my parents brought me home from the hospital. So it's already like a beautiful cathartic.
It's so
moment. Interesting
how it all weaves together. Hey everyone, I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by four PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co, and it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome. All right. So you went to, Campbell Hall School.
I did.
And wait, I have to say something. When I was at Rutgers, I lived in Campbell Hall.
I applied to Rutgers.
You did?
Yeah.
And you didn't want to go?
I got in, but I didn't want to go because I went to Columbia College
Chicago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the second city, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah, Campbell Hall. And I just was talking about Campbell Hall last night because I met someone who went to Rutgers. I'm like, oh, I lived in Campbell Hall. And she's like, so did I. And then I'm doing research when I get home. And I'm like, oh, she lived. All right. So shout out to Campbell Hall.
Campbell Hall.
You grew up on the set of the George Lopez show. But before that show even happened, you wanted to be an entertainer at five. And you said, and I read that your mom would show you old movies as a young child. So when your father, you know, I'm so interested in this because I was a comic on the road and I have kids. So when your father would leave, do you remember that? Do you remember him going away?
That's some of the only things from my childhood that I can remember.
You can't?
A lot of it, trauma is a very interesting thing because I've had a wonderful childhood, but then there are other things that happen that my brain just protects itself. And so, but I think
we all do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I do remember like when sometimes my dad used to take me to school every morning. That was kind of what he would do.
Yeah.
So what he would do sometimes is he would drop me off and he's like, okay, Mayan, I'm not going to see you for 3 weeks. Bye. And as I'm driving off and I'm like, what?
You didn't know before.
I understood. I didn't actually see him do stand-up for the first time until I was 21 years old. I didn't see him until I was 21.
That's really great.
So, you know, people would come up to me and say, these jokes are funny. I'd be like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
Thank you. And,
but that sounds great that you didn't.
And I used to go on stage with him. There was one time that I went in San Antonio when I was like, and he was playing for like 35, 40,000 people. And my mom took me out that day and I got a little lasso loop that if you just turned it, went in a circle. And I had a little cowgirl outfit. And my dad brought me out. And all I remember is just a wall of sound and seeing people and flashing. And I just did my little like loop and I curtsied and then I left.
So, you know,
there's great pictures of me. When my dad used to go and perform at the Ice House and he would bring me up on stage, or, you know, when we go to Vegas and, you know, my mom would take me out when he had dates in Vegas. So like, I remember like seeing him on stage, but I didn't understand what stand up was.
I was, you know, when they were 2.5 and 5 and 2.5 and 7.5, you know, I was single at that point. And when I would go out to do sets, like I'd try to go in the neighborhood and sometimes I had to bring them. And Ben, that's my Jew bell, anything Jewish. So Ben still can do this. You give him any word and he can say it backwards. And so one night he's standing in the bar and I was like, Ben, come up. And so they're all yelling words like television and, you know, whatever. And then, you know, it's the Upper West Side of New York, which is so Jewy and annoying, like these erudite, like, and all of a sudden someone yells out Schadenfreude. And I'm like, you fucking ass. The kid's 8 years old. And you're fucking yelling like I wanted to. Anyway, so that's my story of the one time I brought my kid on stage. But you. All right. So, you know,
but you understand and, you know, and you understand, you know, you get sad but you realize that that's why you're able to have the things that you have. And that's
right.
You know, they're going.
But you weren't financially secure when you were first born, like for your first few years. So you had these working parents.
Yeah. My mom was a casting director and my dad and producer, and she would produce a lot of, you know, Bob Hope specials for ABC or, you know, pop-up things like that. And there's times that my dad had to stay in the car because he was so embarrassed that they had to pay their bills or their mortgage late. And my mom would have to be the one going into the bank.
Right. That stays
then,
with you.
You know, and then he was on the radio and then I feel like I've kind of grown with the last almost 30 years of his career because I remember seeing everything was so new.
You're like a product, you look at you and that's how mature his career is really, you know, your mother was a casting director, I know. Mm-hmm. And she met George in a comedy club and she was the one who went up to him and
she was trying to cast him.
Right. And sort of started his career.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll get into
we'll get into
more of what she did for him. Mm-hmm.
She still gets 30% if that says anything.
Good. Yeah. I think it should be more. Anyway, mm-hmm. He got the show. And so what happened was Sandra Bullock, which who the fuck? Like that is such a random.
When people find that out, it's crazy. Because really, Sandra, she wanted to make a sitcom about a Latin family back then in, 2000, she was already so ahead. And so she was trying to look for a father figure. And so she went and saw my dad at the Ice House. And then she just saw his stand up and she just nixed everything. We're like, you are the show. You have this to write your life. And so it's his life, because my dad really did work at an airplane parts factory and he became the, so it was his life if he didn't become a stand up.
Right.
And so which it's is, very.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I think the beauty of stand up is. Mm-hmm. You, it's such a personal art form and you really do know, you get, I mean, I'm sure after you do a show, I do this, like people, I've said this before on the show, but I don't know if you feel like this, but. You know, and your mother's right. After the show, get the fuck out of there. And I remember as a little girl, I heard that Barbara Streisand didn't want to see the audience after the show. And I was like, oh, that's terrible. And, you know, then you become a performer and you're like, oh, I totally get it. You know, mm-hmm. you've just given your whole, and then you have to be one-on-one with these people. But I love your mother for telling you to dress properly, because it's so funny. You know, I remember at Catch a Rising Star, which was this club on, I'm sure your dad remembers it and your mom remembers it. It was on First Avenue in mm-hmm. Manhattan. And remember Adam Sandler? He must have been like 18, 19. And I, a couple years old, a few years older. And he gets on stage and he's really funny, but he's in sweatpants, like a dirty t-shirt, unshaven. Mm-hmm. And the guy who books stand up, the Catch a Rising Star, who now is books Caroline's, he's like, he's gonna be a star, Lewis. And mm-hmm. I'm like, ew, he doesn't, like, how? Like, and mm-hmm. I always got dressed up. Like last night, I went out to do a couple sets at the Cellar, and I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna wear jeans and my P-Town sweatshirt. And then I was like, no, I'm not. Like, who do I think I am? You know, it's my job, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love that. And, your mother.
You know, exactly. In any marginalized group, it's like, you know, white men could get away with that. And you have to work for it, especially being a woman. And
twice as hard.
Yeah, twice as hard. I mean, like, you know, my friend, when Trump won, it's so funny because one of my best friends, Brookie, she's Jewish and I'm, you know, Latin. Yeah, exactly. Brookie de Pal. So it was so funny because, like, she was just, there's a character based, her name is based on the show, but when he won, I was so depressed. And I was crying in bed for like 3 days. And she was just like, Mayan, are you worried that you're going to get deported? And I'm like, what?
No fucking way.
And I was like, what are you talking about? And she was just like, well, you know, and I'm like, Brookie, you've met my parents. You've been to my house.
Okay, Brookie is not the smartest Jew in the world.
No,
okay.
And then she was like, well, politics don't really affect me. I'm like, you're Jewish. We'd be on the same boat.
Oh my God. How about, you should call her right now.
I was like, are you kidding me? We'd be on the same one out of here. And then because I had a joke that during that time, because I was just, what do I do? Like, I lost my ID. And so I used to go into bars in Chicago and I just bring my passport and that would be my form of ID. I'm like, just to prove I'm legal, you know? But then after a second city, she's like, what should I get you for Christmas? And I'm like, do you want me to get you my birth certificate for Christmas? And she's like, oh, I'm never going to live this down, am I? I'm like, nope, now I'm telling it on a podcast.
Oh my God, that's fucking hope. Brookie, Siri, what is Brookie doing now?
Brookie, she actually books, like, she's an event planner for a Jewish charity in Chicago.
Oh God, Brookie, we need to talk. We need to have a conversation. So you're growing up on a, Like, I don't think people understand, like, you're going to school. Yeah. You are growing up on a soundstage. I want to know. So I know that they called you like the kid AD and, mm-hmm. and right. And you used to bring, who played the mom, the wife,
Constance Marie.
Yeah. You'd bring her to makeup and you'd make quesadillas for everyone. So you have this life at Gamble Hall and sort of this great mother who really, I mean, you, I can't tell you how lucky you are that you had, I mean, you know, you're very,
no, she was the glue that held whatever my nuclear family was together, truly.
Right. And understood the business. Like, that's yeah. the thing. You know, you and have no these other, her. Right. She's, yeah, she's just the greatest.
You know, but, she so you had this mother. Way.
Right. And she got all, she knew all the characters. Mm-hmm. She knew all the bullshit and she was protecting her daughter, but yet allowed you to spend time on the soundstage. What was it like? Because I remember when the first time I ever got a part was on Roseanne. And
oh, really?
I was 20. I don't know. I was about your age, maybe a year older. And I had been doing stand-up for a really long time, but it was like my first time in LA and I went out and I got this part and I remember walking on the sound. And I was addicted to sitcoms when I was growing up. And I remember walking on the soundstage and it was like, for me watching it on TV, it was, you know, that's where I want to live. I want to go to their house. I want to, mm-hmm. and you as a young child understanding, wait, this is not real. This is real. And seeing your parents behaving in both of those situations, I mean, that must have been
also just based on our life too, because
right. you
know, sometimes the writers would call my mom and ask them arguments that my parents had had recently. And so there was one time where my Aunt George and Angie got into an argument and it's almost verbatim a fight that my parents really had. And so my mom was just like, this is the weirdest thing ever. This is the weirdest thing ever. This is right. our life. And this is, but this is, yeah, this is normal. This is our normal. And I think right. partly going around and realizing, you know, this is, I think it was also to explain daddy's job of why he wasn't there. Cause my dad also, when he was working, he would wake up at 7 a.m. and go to bed at 7 p.m. Like, and I would,
right.
or he played golf. Like I would hardly see him when he was working. And so I think that was also a way for me to learn. And I fell in love with it. I absolutely fell in love with it. I would go around and this is like, I would go and I had my own little ID and I would go on the golf cart and go around Warner Brothers and being able to see the magic and in the live audience. Like I just fell in love with it. I used to sit and I used to have little parts too. And yeah, I was right. kid AD. I used to earn like $20 yeah. a show. And I used to save up money aww. To buy American Girl dolls. You know, that was like my
right.
little thing. But I fell in love, but even working like that at a young age, I fell in love with the process of it. And it was, you know, I got to see what being a performer entailed from the beginning, the good, the bad.
But so the magic didn't ever, you know, you didn't become sort of.
It became more magical. It became more magical.
That's what I find.
Because I got to see how it worked. And then you get to see it watching and that was just like, oh, cool. That's what they, you know, already seeing those types of things.
You're seeing how they edit and how the story develops. And
but then, you know, when was there any in LA and people are, I'm like, I get a little jaded and I'm just like, no, that's not actually how it works. You know, I was
right, like, right.
The dream killer for people sometimes. I just would be like, okay, I have to like, you know, I can't peek behind the curtain. Don't let people peek behind the curtain. That's all right.
Was there ever a storyline when you were a kid that you were like, I don't want that on the show? Like, were there ever times when you were together as a family and mm-hmm. it was like, I don't want that broadcast on the show? I had that with my kids. Like, you're not allowed to talk about me in your act. And I was like, oh, fuck.
I think that was more, I don't think that was necessarily for the show. I think during my parents' marriage in the stand-up, that was a problem. And I think yeah. after the divorce, that was more of the problem of my mom would have to like call lawyers and be like, no, like right. stop.
We'll be getting to the divorce in part
two. We'll be getting to the divorce in part two.
Oh, and it's juicy. Yeah, so there was never a discussion like, you know, you're at the dinner table, if that ever happened. Mm-hmm. And you were like, you know, saying, this happened to me at school, please don't put it on the...
Mm-hmm.
Did the kids at school... Like, what was it like? I mean, look, you're going to school in LA. A lot of the kids' parents are in show business.
Yes, which a lot of them.
Right. So you're not like here where it's like, oh my God. Well, no, it's not really. In New York, it's the...
Sometimes I was small potatoes because I was like TV while other kids were... But also,
the
show became very popular. I saw it in elementary school. Like, I was so young and people... I had a lot of trust issues from my parents, but also just people in fame in general. Like, people would come up to me and ask for autographs or t-shirts. And, you know, I'm a little kid, like, wanting to be like, make friends.
Loved.
And I'd be like, sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do that. And I didn't realize that people were taking advantage of me and my kindness, or, you know, my family were always like wanting to bring people up as well. And so I think then the divorce, it was, I'll get to that part too. That was awful at school. Awful. And even just things like with, you know, my dad getting publicly getting dropped. Like, it was just horrible. Horrible.
I can't even imagine, you know, and not having a sibling. I mean, I wonder what that was like. You know, you are this product and the only product of this sort of contentious marriage. And
my parents don't like to hear it, but sometimes I sometimes think there's a reason, because it was a lot. You know, my mom could stay pregnant. She would just have miscarriages. And, you know, I was kind of just a miracle baby. You know, I do wish sometimes I had someone to share it with, because it became a lot.
But they look at you. You're just fucking greatest.
Hey everybody, if you know me, you know I love my liquid IV, and I love giving it to people and telling people about it, and it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV, and I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration. That it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
So you go to school, you're part of the show, you're in this sort of I can't eat. I mean, I hated high school so much. And
I did too.
I can't imagine. And high school is like, people are like, what's showbiz like? I'm like, it's like high school. You're either fucking cool or you're not cool or you're this or you're, you know, whatever. You're burnout. You're weird. You're this. All right. And then to be in high school, in a world that is based around high school, I just, mm-hmm. I can't imagine. So you start going to therapy. Were you 11 when you started going to therapy?
Yeah, about 11. I've been in therapy, different types of therapy since I was about 2 years old. I mean, like speech therapy things like, cause I was a speech therapy kid and I was also a vision therapy kid. And like, I've
really
therapy throughout the math. Dude, I was like,
so that, but sun. That's good. But you can trust them now. Yeah. So mm-hmm. wait, so you had speech therapy.
I had speech therapy because I had trouble with like my THs, my Rs, right. and just verbal processing. Like I didn't speak till I was about 2 years old. So we just did an episode of Lopez versus Lopez about me not speaking Spanish, but I didn't learn. And I've never learned. I still don't know how to speak Spanish because I couldn't learn English. And so they didn't want me to get confused.
Right.
And behavioral therapy. Well, I've been in cognitive behavioral therapy.
I love cognitive behavior. Oh my God. That's
like my realm, cognitive.
That's
therapy.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I usually ask people what they do, my guests, what they do for their mental health at the end of the podcast, but we don't have to.
Oh, I've done a lot.
I know, but I have to say CBT therapy is like, I've been in therapy since I'm 18. But I mean, 11, just CBT therapy, it's like it gives you this toolbox, right? Like that you are like, it helps you recognize, okay, I know what's going on in my brain. You know what I mean?
I am painfully self-aware, where I will sometimes just go to myself and people will be like, I'm like, no, I'm talking with myself. Like I'm having like, Mm-hmm.
And you know what's really annoying, Mayan?
Mm-hmm.
My younger son, Ben, is studying psychology and fucking thinks he knows everything now.
Oh,
and my girlfriend, my partner, is a therapist. And I just want to kill myself. I want to It's horrible. It's fucking horrible. Okay.
I'd be like, not in here.
Get the...
Leave me.
I already hate myself. Okay. I don't need you validating it.
Like can feel it in your breath. Like I can feel it on me. No.
You know, we're going to talk about your TikTok because that's really how the show came to be. But
mm-hmm.
so I've seen so many photos of you with famous people as a little girl, Dakota Fanning, Samuel L. Jackson, Dick Van Dyke, Obama. Like, did you know, oh my God, these people are like, I am different. I am seeing this because of who my parents are.
Absolutely. I think, you know, before my mom would always go forward and explain. And I think there was actually one time that we didn't go to a movie premiere for about 2 years because there was one time that I said, oh, when is the limo coming? And my parents were
oh boy.
And I was like, me and my big mouth. But I was, you know, that was a lesson where it's like, no, this is a privilege, right? It's a perk. And that's where I got to see the good parts of having your parent as a celebrity, the bad parts. And these experiences that I've had and the stories that I have are some of like the greatest that I have. I even have some on my phone. Like I met Phyllis Diller when I was a little girl. And
oh God, yeah, I loved her. I met her. Yeah.
I have this picture.
Oh my God. Look how cute you are. She was the best. Do you remember meeting her?
I do. And I remember just like kind of being, we went to her house for her birthday. My mom, my dad.
Did you know?
And I didn't really know her, but I could feel her, who she was. And I was like, oh, you know, you just felt that aura around her. And I was just talking to her and she was like, you're funny. She's like, I can see you. And now it's like one of the
greatest. And you remember that.
I remember it so clearly. Like her being like, you are a funny little thing. Like, I think you could be, you know, like your daddy. Like you know, you got it.
Wow.
You know? And she
I love
like
that
older.
You remember that.
Oh, I
and
remember,
you know, concert pianist and painter. Like, she was so fucking talented.
And how about also Anne Lopez being the great conductor of excellence that she is. I went to the Mary Poppins, like, 50-year premiere, and my mom went to Western Costumes and ordered me and rented me a Mary Poppins outfit. So I was a little brown Mary Poppins.
Oh, my God. I love that.
So, and I went and I saw... And I met Dick Van Dyke and look at his face. Like,
he's just loving you.
Beaming at me.
Look how cute you are.
And then I met Julie Andrews and she just was like,
I fucking hate you.
Like, looking at
me. Oh my God. Look at their faces. Their faces are full of joy because you're so adorable.
It was just the best.
What was it like having Justin Bieber sing to you? And how old were you?
I was 13, 14 years old.
I can't even.
Okay, I'm going to say this, and people can fact check this, and I will fully accept if I am wrong, but I think that was his first late night show appearance ever as a performer. And I'm the one that showed my dad Justin Bieber on YouTube and was like, this kid is going to be really popular. You should get him on your show. And I think he was the first one. So or even in just the beginning, I, as a fan, helped some way, like, getting him on his way. And that was, like, because he didn't know. And I was sitting in, like, further in the row. And the second my mom saw him coming up, she shoved me to the edge. And you can see it when you walk and watch the clip.
Oh, that's so funny.
I am running. And so he comes up, and then he just puts his arm around me, and he just looks at me, and I just...
I died.
And then I went backstage and he looks at me and he just goes, you. And I'm like, yeah, me. And he was like, wait, how did you? I was like, I'm George's daughter. He was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And, you know, there were other events that I had seen.
This was his talk show, right?
This was Lopez Tonight.
Too bad you didn't say, I'm the reason you're here. Bitch.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And my mom has another story too, that very quickly, like, my mom had Justin Bieber was when he was kind of wild and and so he had there was a putting green in the back, like, part of the green room, there's like a putting green. And so they held all these, like, picks or whatever that you put the golf thing on. Very clever. My dad's a golfer, whatever.
Yeah.
And clearly I care. And I put it out, and he was throwing them around everywhere. And my mom goes, pick it up.
To Justin Bieber?
And she goes, what? She goes, pick it up. Pick all of this up.
Was he scared? I love it. Go, Anne. Woo!
And she was like, pick it up now. This is disrespectful.
Wow.
I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why I love, like, your mother.
She's great. She's like, she doesn't care. She didn't care.
That's the greatest. Okay. So do you ask to go to therapy at 11, or this is your first time with, like, talk therapy about your feelings and stuff. Did you ask?
I think I don't even know if I can remember because it's been so long. I was just very confused, and there was a lot of things happening with my family at that time, other family members. And I think my mom just wanted to help me make sure. And also I had trouble, like, speaking, but I think it was just having another person to talk to. That wasn't my mom. And I had a very difficult relationship with therapy sometimes, because there was times where I would have therapy and then my mom would go into the fit with the therapist afterwards and then try to see what I said. And so she was like, well, for safety. And I'm like, no, I need to have a safe. So I would go to therapy, but I wouldn't be completely honest in therapy. And so that was kind of where it started to build up, because, you know, I would try to journal and she would read my journals. And so she's changed a lot, but there were,
boundaries.
Yeah. I was an extension of her, and it was, you know, sometimes I feel like my mom was too good of a mom.
Right.
Sometimes, like, she, you know, she actually had to tell my dad to hug me at times.
Oh. And,
you know, that was another thing where, you know, I would have to tell my dad and then he would push me away.
Right.
And then he'd be like, hey, love bug, like, get off me. And then, but, you know, he didn't know how to.
Right. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with Mayan Lopez. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel. It's edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast and my life would not be possible without the help of Brittany Jo Sowards Richmond. That's right. If you like the show, please, if you haven't subscribed and sent a review, like, seriously, what is wrong with you? That is what I need. I need people to do that because I need to keep doing the podcast, which I can't do if people don't tell other people about it. You know what I'm saying? Because the advertisers, it's all about downloads. It's all about listeners. So, yeah, I just want you to love me and support me. Now, what I have to do is I'm now looking up on my phone some of the people who listen to the end. If you listen to the end, I'm telling you right now, I do have a listener to the end. So I was doing the show in Scarsdale, New York, and I get off stage. It's the tiniest room in the world. And I get off stage, and as I'm walking off stage, this woman says to me, who's sitting in the audience, I listen to the end. And I remember her name. Her name was Claudia. Or is Claudia. And then she sent me a message on one of these. First of all, I fucking hate Twitter, by the way. It's like Elon Musk is the worst. The worst. Okay. Anyway, so she sent me a message, but I don't know if it was on Twitter or Instagram or... Okay, I don't know what it was on, but it was on something. And yeah. All right, well, her name's Claudia, and I don't know her last name, but thank you, Claudia, for listening to the end. I love everyone who listens to the end. What else do I have to tell you? Really, that's it. I don't, you know, please come to my shows in Florida. Please come. If you're in New York City, Stand Up New York, December 25th, I'm doing two shows at 4 and 7. Get your asses there. There's a Chinese restaurant literally across the street. Like, literally across the street. You can get all... And there's a movie theater a few blocks away. You could go see a comedy show, go to a movie, and get Chinese food, which is the most Jewish thing you could do on Christmas Day. Okay? So, there you go. And that's it. I love you all so much for listening. Enjoy the weeks up until the holiday, which are usually shit. Full of parties and shit, and I can't believe how fast this year went by. Can you believe how fucking fast this year went by? Okay, well, I'm gonna go take a nap. Because I'm gonna go night-night. I'm gonna go night-night, because it's very late. And I love you. So, thank you all again so much for listening. And as we always say, so long!